I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE amidst the fallout of the historic meeting of the world's two global nuclear superpowers in Alaska. Putin's Russia, with the biggest land area in the world and the biggest economy in Europe, fourth biggest in the world by PPP, has 5,500 warheads. Trump's USA, second only to China when it comes to economic power by PPP, but with immense cultural imperial power, has around 5,200 warheads. On the table was the prospect of avoiding global annihilation. The stakes were the end of the world. This eve of destruction, the inevitable result of NATO troublemaking that culminated in the US-backed coup in Kiev in 2014, has set the stage for the shadow of nuclear war. Another world-involved war, though, has been raging for more than a century, now reaching its culmination in a genocide. Tomorrow, Israeli companies, universities and local authorities are to strike to protest Israel's full US-UK-EU armed military takeover of Gaza. This while Israel, in NATO nation media, desperately tries to justify its assassination of five of the perhaps 300 journalists killed since 2023. One of them was the face of northern Gaza, Anas al Sharif, who foresaw his own death before he and his colleagues were drone bombed in a tent this week, preparing to tell the world about the NATO armed full invasion of Gaza. On Monday, we'll again speak to one of the world's leading scholars of the Holocaust, Israeli American ex-IDF professor Omer Bartov. Today, we're joined from Tel Aviv by Dr. Guy Shalev, executive director of Physicians for Human Rights Israel. Guy, thanks so much for coming on Going Underground. I mean, what's going on amongst Israeli Jews, maybe the question. The Israeli Democracy Institute latest poll says 80%, around 80% of Jewish Israelis are not that troubled by reports of famine and suffering. But now, I noticed Jeremy Ben-Ami of the lobby group J Street, we had J Street on recently, let alone you, are calling out Israel as being genocidal.
Right. I think these two insights are connected. I don't think you can commit a genocide as a society without having this kind of a wall of denial of being indifferent to the other people's suffering. And the numbers you mentioned about 80% people not worried about the starvation of Palestinians in Gaza is very sad, especially for me as Jewish Israeli citizen of Israel. But unfortunately, this is what we've been dealing with for the past almost 2 years.
And that's, I mean, obviously Israeli officials are always calling Israel a democracy, but you can't have democracy without a free media. Your reports from your organization, they're not being seen by most Israeli Jews. Why?
Right. So I think the idea of free media is something we need to reconsider. We know from previous wars that governments controlled media and enforced ignorance over their people. But here we are seeing something else in Israel. Allegedly free media outlets, they can cover what's going on in Gaza. They know what's going on in Gaza. The international media covers what's going on in Gaza. But they make a decision on their own, not to cover what's going on. And we can speak about our own report. We published a report concluding that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. The entire world covered that report, looked into the content, into our arguments, into the evidence that we are bringing forward. But in Israel, only one outlet looked into that, read the report, which is Haaretz, one newspaper that is more left-leaning. And the entire media field has just ignored it.
I mean, you know, you're not allowed to use the word genocide on British television. And here's the Japanese Financial Times. Arms factories expand at triple speed as Europe switches onto war footing. The weaponry the IDF uses to carry out the genocide is coming from Western Europe and, of course, the United States. What do you think of the fact that you can't actually use the word genocide that Physicians for Human Rights Israel is using in media in Western Europe and Britain? I mean, it's on the people can see in their social media what happens if a guest, maybe it's happened to you when you've been on a NATO nation media and you use the G word, immediately the presenter will start to knock back at you.
Right. For one aspect, I think it's a good thing that this word is being taken serious, that this is what is acknowledged as the crime of crimes. Is something that we take very heavily. We look into that very seriously. We're not just throwing that word around just lightly. So that's the good thing about it. But then when you see a genocide, when you see the evidence on the ground, when international organizations such as Amnesty International, when a Palestinian organization such as El Har, when Israel-based organizations such as ourselves and B'Tselem provide the information, provide the evidence, do the analysis, use experts. You're going to have Professor Bartov on your show. People who are experts in defining what a genocide is and letting the world know when a genocide happens, then I think the media outlets definitely need to take this into consideration. And it is in not just using the word that's important. The Genocide Convention is very clear about the obligation of third countries to act when a genocide is taking place. If countries such as the UK, European countries, the US, would acknowledge that this is a genocide, they'd have legal obligations to stop it. And unfortunately, we're not seeing enough actions. We're seeing some statements, but we're not seeing actions to actually save people's lives and stop the genocide.
Yeah, the kind of statements about organizations, people who use the genocide word like you do, it's inaccurate and unhelpful, according to Sir Keir Starmer of Britain and the Foreign Secretary David Lammy. Macron said, it is not genocide. Chancellor Scholz of Germany, this is a distortion of history to call it genocide. So yeah, we're getting what the countries, the leaders of the countries, that's former Chancellor Scholz, leaders of the countries that are supplying the weapons say about it.
Right, and I think it's just what you need to do as leaders of countries, definitely, but also the viewers and the public. Just look at the evidence. And we're in our report are really focusing on Article 2C of the Genocide Convention, which deals with the systematic infrastructural attack on a people in order to create conditions of life that cannot maintain their ability to survive. And then just look at the evidence. There were 36 medical facilities in Gaza before October 7th. 33 of them were attacked. All infrastructure related to sanitary, to sewage, to water, everything that's related to health, education system, universities, everything that may allow a people to survive is just destroyed. And how can you look at that? Look at this, more than 2 million people without healthcare, without access to water and food, and not see that this article, Article 2C of the convention, is being fulfilled.
Why did it take Physicians for Human Rights Israel to so long to reach this conclusion? I understand that your organization says that the assault on hospitals began from week one, October the 13th.
Right, so
2023.
Right. So we've been following these attacks from day one. We have been working in basically in emergency mode for almost 2 years. We've been debating and analyzing and consulting with experts regarding the definition of genocide and its applicability to this attack since more than a year ago. Coming to this conclusion in a way that we thought is based on as much evidence and analysis that is as rigorous as we can. It took us a while, too long, I agree with you. We of course are also counting on and built upon the work of others, of Amnesty International that already published their report in the summer of 2024. And like I said, Palestinian human rights organizations that have done very good work from the beginning in seeing what's going on the ground.
Why do you think all these organizations were so slow? 22 hospitals on the 13th of October, 2023, and the rest of the NATO nation media was saying it's anti-Semitic to call what Israel is doing in any way bad. In any way, their response should be considered wrong, given the events of October 7th.
I'm sorry, the question is, why did it take us so long, you mean?
No, but why has it taken all these organizations so long?
Oh.
I mean, you've said that 22 hospitals were targeted, and of course, NATO nation media said, no, they were targeted because, as we're told by the Israeli authorities, they were targeted because they're legitimate targets. It was so soon after October 7th that these were targeted.
Right. So, first of all, in October 13, the 22 hospitals got evacuation orders. They were not yet all of them attacked directly. But we, in our analysis, this is already the beginning of the systematic attack of all of healthcare. If you evacuate 22 hospitals that serve more than 1 million people, you're definitely committing a crime that is has a very big effect on the population, civilians. It was clear from the very beginning that war crimes are being committed, that crimes against humanity are being committed. And I think related to your previous question about the weight of the word genocide, I think it took organizations, international, definitely Israel-based organizations, a time to come to this conclusion that indeed what we are seeing is the crime of crimes.
Do you believe, Professor Bartov, who, as you say, we're talking to him on Monday, that the Holocaust in Western Europe is being weaponized to provide cover, to stop people using the word genocide that you're using?
Definitely, the Holocaust and the history of anti-Semitism has played a very problematic role in the denialism of Western European countries, in, of course, of Israelis. Accusations of anti-Semitism were used to silence criticism of Israel, to point out to Israel's crimes. And I got to say, for me personally, this is very painful as a grandson of a Holocaust survivor, that the genocide of my people is being used in order to allow another genocide to take place. This is just horrendous.
And you don't think you could have said that, say, in 2023? It's taken a couple of years before this to sink in with all the supporters, basically, of Israel. I know that your organization has always taken a very deep critical analysis of the treatment of the Palestinian people in your region.
Right. No, we've said from the very beginning that these are war crimes. These are crimes against humanity. This attack, this very attack on Gaza, is unlawful and is causing a lot of unjustified, unnecessary pain to a lot of civilians in the region. I think the question about whether we come to the conclusion that is this attack is defined as genocide or not, that we can, I think, debate about whether what the timing could have been. And I agree that, like I said, it could have been earlier, but we were very clear from day one that this has to stop. I think it was October 11 that we issued our first statement calling for immediate stop of the attack on Gaza.
Dr. Guy Shalev, I'll stop you there. More from the Executive Director of Physicians for Human Rights Israel after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the Executive Director of Physicians for Human Rights Israel, Dr. Guy Shalev. Guy, we were talking about genocide in Gaza, in Palestine, and why it happened. Of course, your organization, Physicians for Human Rights Israel, was all over the NATO nation media, the media of countries supplying the weaponry that Israel is using to slaughter the people of Palestine. They loved your organization a while back. The New Yorker, owned by the Neuhaus family, the Condé Nast Neuhaus family, how Hamas used sexual violence on October the 7th. Physicians for Human Rights Israel issued a report collecting evidence of sexual and gender-based violence. One of its authors lays out their findings, Isaac Chatner. You were used, weren't you, your organization, to lay the foundations of public opinion to allow the genocide to happen. And would you say that this, your latest reports outlining the genocide, are not being carried with as much vigor by these media outlets?
I think that both of these claims, both of these reports got a lot of traction in international media, one for a better reason than the other, meaning the second one was looking into evidence that was, as you said before, hard to watch for Western countries and the publics. While the first one was too easy maybe to watch, something that maybe many expected to see and maybe read into something that was what they already thought had happened. And I think that first report that we issued was about looking into the need to investigate what happened in October 7. Unfortunately, it seems that the Israeli government, Israeli institutions have done a lot in order to not allow the investigation to be performed properly. And as a human rights organization, we want the truth out. We want the actual truth out, and perpetrators to be accountable.
Because Physicians for Human Rights Israel played a terrible role, wouldn't you say, in those early days of after October the 7th, Pramila Patten of the UN being used, because all I ever heard was look at the rapes of the, I mean, it was so redolent of what Edward Said, the great Christian Palestinian, would write about the Orientalism of the violence of the savage being used to justify what would then become the genocide. Didn't you feel that way? Were there arguments in your organization about it?
Definitely this was manipulated in a way that, like you said, strengthened tropes in Western publics about the Orient, definitely. And most importantly, it's not as painful for me to be manipulated as an organization. What's really bad, and what's bad for people everywhere in the world, that sexual violence became something to be used in order to justify crimes.
But it was being used by your organization, in effect, because you didn't have the proof, did you? You were holding too much store by the Israeli authorities, who were clearly using sexual violence propaganda, which is being used by Netanyahu, your prime minister, only the other day, to somehow justify genocide.
Yeah, so we were very clear about what our report says. Our report brought forward testimonies that were out in the public sphere, and we cited those testimonies. I think that we should have been more careful in citing testimonies that were later discovered to be inaccurate, and that's why we issued a clarification on that report, saying that some of the testimonies that we accepted were found false, which is something that is the right thing to do. But in any case, the objective of this report, the objective of our work, was to bring justice while never justifying a crime by another crime. We were very clear about our position regarding the attack on Gaza, even while we published that report in the beginning.
Now, your organization has been heroic in talking about prison conditions for the Palestinians, who would call it hostages of Israel, under discussion, I suppose, at ceasefire talks, which don't seem to happen as regards what's happening in Gaza. Tell me about your reporting on and your analysis of what's been happening at Zdeh Timan prison. I mean, it's your understanding that Israeli Jewish doctors are enabling the torture of other Palestinian doctors there?
Yes, definitely. So first of all, the facility, Zdeh Timan facility, is a torture camp. It held almost 1,000 inmates in cages, tortured, beaten, sexually abused. And then when Israeli hospitals refused to care for these people, they created a facility, which is a field hospital. You cannot even call it a field hospital, in the premises. That facility acted in a way of violation ethical conducts of doctors. The very fact of doctors participating in the operation of that facility by performing their duty in such a facility is an ethical violation. And then in our report, we specifically look at the detention and torture of medical workers from Gaza. So more than 300 medical workers were detained by Israel, forcibly disappeared, kidnapped basically, and then held in torture conditions. Four medical workers died, three of them doctors. One of them is the very famous Dr. Adnan El-Bursh, the leading orthopedist of the Gaza Strip. Overall, 90 inmates, 90 detainees died in Israeli custody since October 7. But we're also looking what the consequences are for the Gazan healthcare system, with more than 1,500 doctors and medical workers killed and more than 300 detained. This is part of the attack on the system as a system and its ability to provide care for more than 2 million people in Gaza.
I mean, there was a documentary that was banned by the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, famously about documenting the systemic destruction of healthcare in Gaza, which you'd expect as part of a genocide to wipe out a ethnic community. But I mean, when you were reading your analysts and people that source your material, what did you feel when you saw that Israeli Jewish doctors were torturing their Palestinian professional colleagues, in effect? They were enabling the torture of doctors and nurses.
I think we've
seen... How is that possible?
First, I would say doctors are human beings. I'm not sure I should expect more from Israeli doctors than from the general Israeli public. I want to expect more because I think that medical ethics is supposed to guide doctors, even when feelings of revenge, of anger, of hatred are somehow playing a role in their acts. They should follow, they must follow medical ethics. And what we've seen, that a violation of those ethics, like I said, refusal to hospitalize patients, early dismissal of detainees before their care is being completed, the release of a detainee that was a victim of sexual assault back to the facility where he was assaulted. These are all violations not only of just human rights and what we consider to be the right way to act as humans, but also of medical ethics. Doctors must care for their patients, must acknowledge them as patients. What the Israeli Medical Association have referred to them once and again as terrorists, while they're patients that needs to be taken care of by their doctors. We've seen doctors citing a petition to bomb Gazan hospitals, and the Israeli Medical Association not taking any disciplinary measures against those people. And at the same time, medical institutions, in Israel hospitals and clinics disciplined Palestinian doctors. Palestinian doctors who are citizens of Israel, who work in the Israeli system, for just the most basic social media posts, being in solidarity with Gaza or just calling for the end of the war. They called them terrorists and sometimes fire them and discipline them. So what we looked, when we looked at the way that the medical community in Israel acted in the past 2 years, we've seen a lot of failures in many respects. But I also have to say that we are seeing now hundreds of doctors who have written a letter to the Israeli Medical Association, hundreds of doctors who are writing petitions and writing op-eds demanding that Israel stops its attack on Gaza, looking at the starvation, looking at the attack on the Gazan healthcare system. There are still a few out of the entire medical community in Israel, unfortunately, but maybe this is where we're going to see more resistance and people kind of demanding the government to stop this atrocity.
Well, just finally, what's the role, I mean, as an organization for physicians, human rights physicians for human rights, what's the role of anesthesia as a weapon of war? We've seen reports of the emphasis of denying anesthetics so that we can see on our phones pictures of children being amputated, their limbs amputated after British-American bombs have destroyed their bodies so that the amputation can be conducted without anesthesia. I suppose at that prison, I don't know whether operations similarly without anesthesia. Have you ever seen this role of anesthesia as a weapon of war in any prior conflict being used?
I personally have not documented or read any documentation of that, but the lack of anesthesia in Gaza is one thing. That is part of blocking aid, blocking medical equipment, blocking medications coming into Gaza, medications that some of them save lives. Some of them are there to prevent pain. And again, of course, these are all policies, very clear policies that were taken, knowing the result of these policies. When the Israeli establishment knows that it blocks anesthesia from going into Gaza, they know the result, and the result that is kids who are being amputated without anesthesia. And we have seen the same with detainees. We have evidence of detainees not getting anesthesia while they're being treated, just for it's not and it wasn't lacking. There was anesthesia in the Israeli hospital at the time, but it was as an act of torture and inflicting pain. And when we're looking at genocide, we're looking at killing, but we're also looking at bodily harm, mental harm. These are all aspects of genocide. And we can see these acts being done not by just a soldier on the ground or a commander. These are acts that are being done as a policy.
And just finally and very quickly, I mean, will it be the British-American bombs, Western European bombs that kill and exterminate all the Palestinians, or will it be the starvation caused by the denial of food aid into Gaza, the Gaza Strip?
To my opinion, I think that the second is the one that you will see more casualties. We know we have already numbers of more than 60,000 people who were killed directly by bombs and a military attack. But there are estimations of more than 100,000 that are already dead. Other estimations are much higher than that. And I think only when we'll see the excess death of Palestinians in Gaza in 2024, in 2025, we'll see how many Gazans died in 2022, for example, and how many died in 2024. And then we'll see the excess death. And that will be much higher than the number of Palestinians who were killed by bombs. And that number is because of starvation, is because of the destruction of the healthcare system, is because of cancer patients who couldn't get treatment, because of dialysis patients who could not access the dialysis in order to survive. Kids with conditions that require a medical evacuation. Israel is blocking medical evacuation for almost 2 years in different ways, with more than 14,000 patients who need urgent medical evacuation outside of Gaza, and they are blocked. More than 600 of them died. I get these messages almost daily. We're trying to get someone out. We're getting the messages. We need to get that kid out. And then a week after that kid died, we couldn't save him. And just seeing that, I think, is a lot to just understand what's really going on in Gaza.
Guy Shalev, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by the UK-US EU armed genocide in Gaza and across Palestine. We'll be back on Monday with genocide scholar Professor Omer Bartov to discuss why Israel is repeating history's darkest crimes. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.